Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Bill Armstrong. Bill is the 2013 treasurer of the National Association of Realtors, the largest trade organization of its type with about 1 million agents who are involved in both residential and commercial real estate. Bill's been a broker for over 30 years and is vice president of McIntosh Realtors in Frederick, Maryland. He's also involved in fundraising, has raised over $300,000 for adults and children with disabilities, and he's a father of three. Bill, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Taking a look at the future unfolds in 2014, maybe I ought to ask you, is there anything that we thought was going to happen that has sort of been a surprise that it hasn't?
Well, I don't know that I would say that there are that many surprises out there. We knew we had a bit of inventory that had to be absorbed before you would see construction start to commence. And the good news is, in some markets, we are experiencing that. We're seeing a little bit of an uptick in new construction. But in my market, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area in the Maryland suburbs, and I've got a project that's had site plan approval for some time, and we haven't been able to get going on it because people are actually shrinking their operations and their space. Now, there are places where it's going great guns, but we still have some inventory, and it's hard to kick off new construction while that's the case.
Now, we're talking specifically commercial, which you're mentioning right now. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Now, I want to touch on residential because it'll lead into some questions on the commercial side. The residential mix in California was dominated 5 years ago by lender-owned properties, and then we sort of shifted to lender-owned properties and short sales, and now we're dominated by 90% plus of normal sellers, which is a much healthier market. Commercial real estate, has it gone through that same process, or did it somehow do things that it didn't quite have the REO domination that we thought it might?
You know, I don't know that we've experienced the REO domination that residential real estate did, certainly. There's more consideration, and I don't know that the underwriting standards were thrown out for commercial loans. So I would say, no, that's not really been the case. There's a lot of institutional money that's out there, so it's got to go to work somewhere. But the stock market has been healthy enough that nobody's been rushing into the commercial market. But on the other hand, residential had been and remains a pretty viable option for folks because they've been so undervalued.
So does a healthy stock market hurt real estate development, or does it add lots of money to where people start looking and spreading their money in other places?
Well, a healthy stock market's not necessarily creating jobs. It's a place where investors have some of their money, and of course you can't put it all in one basket, as you know what happened. So while it's a healthy market, it might take a little more impetus to get you to make a move towards some commercial investment. On the other hand, if it's not creating jobs and you're not filling, if it's office, for example, and you're not filling the office space, I see more and more businesses, when they consider moving their operations, they're downsizing too, and they're reconfiguring their spaces. So we've got to factor in where we're going.
What part does uncertainty play in commercial real estate's decision?
Oh, it plays a great deal. I mean, there are so many outstanding legislative issues that make investors nervous. And just, you know, the legislation, the regulations that come down. We've got a couple of things. First of all, this year is the expiration of TRIA, the Terrorism Reauthorization Insurance Act. And I think we've struck a deal and we're going to go forward with that. But, you know, there the Congress is about to go on recess, and we need to know that certain things are done. For example, just with TRIA alone, if you've got some significant holdings, and it doesn't have to be in New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles or San Francisco, it's happened in Oklahoma City. So smaller markets can experience this terrorism. If something happens and a building goes down and terrorism insurance is not available, well, the insurers aren't going to provide for these properties, and guess what follows? The lenders aren't going to lend on these properties.
Right.
So then we've got real problems. So that's one. The government is the best equipped body entity to keep track of that. They were listening to the chatter and all that. It just isn't something we can have the private insurers or the rates would just go through the roof.
In the residential side, especially in California, say in 2012 and 2013, hedge funds were very significant participants as buyers. Has that also happened in the commercial side? And if so, in what segments?
Well, yeah. There are, there are so many institutional buyers. And, as properties became really a bargain and couldn't be duplicated for anywhere near the asking prices, opportunities have come up. But now multifamily has really pretty well corrected itself. Hotel vacancies are down, so we've got more people using hotel rooms. Some of the REITs are doing very well. Industrial is one of the areas where I'd say we've started to see a slight uptick. And same with retail. Retail had been suffering, but all of these markets are slowly doing a little bit better. Now I'm looking at across-the-board numbers, so certain markets, people would disagree with me, but across the board, we've seen a slight uptick from the fourth quarter of 13 to this year, and year over year, it was a modest increase from 2012. So it's going in the right direction, but slowly.
Yeah, and that seems almost to be the case in almost every sector. It's getting mildly better, but not at a pace that maybe has a very positive effect on the unemployment rate or employment. What was the thought going into 2014 as far as employment, and are we where we thought we would be, and is that good enough?
No, we're not. I think there's still a ton of uncertainty out there. My understanding, and I can say this from experience, and my daughter is in human resources, and she's been with one of the biggest firms in New York, and they've got 70% employees, 30% contract employees, and they're actually transitioning towards 30% employees and 70% contract employees for a number of reasons. And this is across the board with several, she's told me, and that includes Google, Twitter, some of the other big employers. The reason for that is everybody is necessarily on probation. A year later, they're up for an extension of their contract, and if they get it, great. But they don't have to comply with certain Affordable Care Act requirements.
Right.
They don't have to. They can be let go without any problem. Just say, "Sorry, we can't renew your contract." But it also creates a double-edged sword because these folks then don't have job security and can't apply for and get a residential loan because they've got an annual contract, nothing more. So when she's telling me the trend is in employment that huge employers are transitioning away from full-time employee status, that's of great concern to me.
I don't know that everybody's familiar with the term contract employment. So let's just cover that for a second. Somebody working for Google has a job, and their 70% is what we think of them as that's where they work, and 30% are hired. And now you're saying annually, or is it by the job or demand, almost like an independent contractor?
It is like an independent contractor, and some of them make the transition, the grade, to become full-time employee. They're sort of probationary.
Okay.
But at this point, they're transitioning away from that for a number of reasons that have come about partially because of how the government has treated employers.
Correct. So they're trying to save a lot of money on things that would be overhead, but now if people are self-employed and come and provide service only, that's a very different ballgame.
Yes, it is. And I'm telling you, these people, these young people right now, are thrilled to land that job.
Okay.
And then they're thrilled and really hopeful that they get renewed, re-upped. And so we got issues with that. And that's a great deal of uncertainty. And I don't know that we're ever going to change it. A lot of people have multiple part-time jobs, and it's just not the same. And it's a result of government intervention.
Yeah, it's interesting that they've sort of set up a game to where, okay, let's get really tight on lending. At the same time, we're going to make a job market less and less likely to provide the stability that gets a yes answer from a lender.
Yeah, we've got a lot of people that don't realize the unintended consequences from their actions.
That's right. So, you know, when I hear the unemployment rate, it sounds like we're really headed in a positive direction. You've added a piece of the puzzle I hadn't thought of, that there's all kinds of little caveats in there. So people that have stopped looking have grown at almost the same rate as job creation.
So, right. I, that number is something that I would never believe in a million years, the numbers that they're preaching to us. There are just so many people that aren't a part of that statistic any longer.
Exactly. And it's, okay, it's like it's made as needed or something, but it's discouraging. It actually is when you start hearing statistics and you feel like you cannot buy them, you know.
No, I think it's being underrepresented. As a matter of fact, if it goes and that were accurate, why would we have every bit of available office, retail, or office space? We've got a lot of it sitting empty, nothing new being built. It's being absorbed slowly but surely, but that's because we have a certain amount of growth that is inevitable, has to happen. And they're downsizing their space. They're going to more cubicles and more telecommuting, although actually, who was it that just went back the other way, said they don't want to have people telecommuting? I think that was Yahoo. But anyway, one way or another, we have some real property issues that sort of are very telling when we're not filling up office space with all these new jobs that are being purported.
And how's the income compared to, let's say, you're a full-time employee or you're a contract employee? Is it more when you're a contract employee?
Well, as a contract employee, it is pretty healthy number. That's, I think, the misnomer. It's a pretty significant number, but at the end of the day, a full benefited employee does get more. But young people don't know the difference. They don't know that they don't have a 401k being created on their behalf and what the real value of health care benefits are, because if they're not getting them there, they may or may not be getting them still. And if they do, and some of them are still discouraged when they try to sign up. So I guess we're changing this conversation to a health care and employer situation. And I'm sorry that we've trended that way, but it's a part of what goes on and impacts all the others.
You know, what's interesting to me is that there's really been no volatility of interest rates for a very long time, since about 2009. And when I got in the business in 1981, the Fed fund rate changed 21 times that year. And it hasn't changed in 5 or 6 years. And yet there's really very little confidence, and you feel very uncertain. And how's that played out in California? Riverside and San Bernardino counties are sort of bedroom communities to Orange County and LA. And we still have land. And normally construction drives our migration and our economy. We have the lowest interest rates. You know, you can argue at 4% is higher than 3.5%, but it's also lower than the 17% when I saw it in 1981. So interest rates are great. We've got developers in Riverside and San Bernardino sitting on their hands creating 10% of the subdivisions that they used to in any other good year. Honestly, we're just sitting here because I think they're so uncertain about the rules of engagement for lending. And I think lenders are looking at the same rules going, we're not sure if we're going to have to buy a loan back. So we definitely have some things that are challenges on the residential side. Does commercial, and I know you made a statement about they probably didn't go as crazy on the commercial side as residential, and I'm sure that's true. But they did certainly here's one thing they did do, and this has caused problems, is they did stated income loans in the sense that they projected income for the structure. And that was that was where they were incorrect. That didn't happen. As a matter of fact, many times it's still vacant in California.
Well, that is very true. And as a matter of fact, it used to be that you could have perhaps 50% pre-leased, or if you have great credit and a great history as a developer, maybe even somewhat less than that as a pre-leased portion for you to commence. And then now you really, really have to have strong support in advance of any construction project. Something else that's happened is the cost of materials has gone up. The cost of transporting anything has gone up. The cost of everything's gone up except income. Interest rates, fortunately, have stayed relatively low, but commercial loans are still pretty hard to come by, and you've got to show great equity, great lease-up, pre-leasing activity, and then just have to have a good relationship with your lenders. Another thing that's happened is you've got a lot of people who've come out of the construction workforce, so that's another reason construction costs have gone up. There used to be somebody would work for a huge builder for a year or two and think then all of a sudden they've seen it all, and they go out and get their pickup truck and they start their own construction company, and they're a subcontractor, and that's fine and well, but those kinds of businesses, many of them have gone away, and those people are either employed by someone else who let enough people go that they probably haven't rehired a bunch of them, or they've gone out of the construction trade altogether and finally found something else.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, Bill, because I remember one of the things about migration shifts in California. You know, we had some volatility where we lost a bunch of people, and I read reports that said there's a line of demarcation. If people are out of the state for longer than 4 years, they no longer think of California as their home. And the same thing is true what you've just said. If you leave the construction industry because it's dead as a doornail for 4 years, there's a good chance you found something else to do.
Yeah.
And so those tradespeople that you could just say, okay, we'll just call, let's call Harry back to work. He ain't coming back.
Yeah.
And so now you've got, maybe you do have actually a shortage to where you can't do the volume, or you can't do it well enough for a while before everybody plays catch up again.
There's been quite a transition there.
What about foreign investors? We talked a little bit about hedge funds, but in residential real estate in California, we literally have some very wealthy people coming in from China, and just spoke at a group that there were Chinese investors in the audience, and their idea of a deal could be very different. Beijing, if you look at their median price, it's 24 times their gross income. So you can't land too many places in California where it's anywhere close to 10. So they think it's a bargain, and they literally buy, let's say they go into an area that's $800,000 houses. We have one agent that just has a client that says, I'll just buy them all.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point. We're sitting here as Americans, sitting on our hands oftentimes, and these other folks say, gosh, America is still much more stable than my own country, and whether that's China, India, Brazil, you know, South Florida has been really bought up a lot by Brazilians. We were down there a year and a half, 2 years ago, and just all these guys are investors are buying up South Florida, and Miami just rings. But I talked to them. I said, "What about other cities? There are a lot of them up and down the coast. Florida is a real strong thing. That's just the proximity for them." But yeah, their money is cheap. They are much more inclined they still consider us the much more stable. That's actually the scary thing, because we know better. We've seen what happened. A lot of people have lost a lot of money here, but they've got governments and regimes that go by the wayside, and they can lose a lot. So they're still much more comfortable with our system and our modest appreciation.
One of the things that's a little uncomfortable when you're kind of relying on from people from out of our country investing here to sustain whatever it is, Japan did that for a while in the 80s. They took money out of Japan and brought it here. But when their market crashed and stayed crashed for 20 years, the buyer, you know, Japan as a big buyer disappeared as well. They're not a dominant buyer of anything, real estate.
Yeah, Pebble Beach is a good example of that.
So, you know, that's one thing you have to be careful of. If another country has their domino fall, it'll change the dynamic here.
You can imagine what happened to other countries when our economy tanked. There was an awful lot of their money here, and so we really impacted adversely a lot of people throughout the world.
I've been pretty stubborn on this next point about the demographic shift and what this generation is actually going to want to see in the way of housing or in the way of job. And it's interesting. I've really fought the idea that they don't mind staying, not owning a home, that they want to stay flexible to where they can go, wherever the jobs are and all that. I just thought, well, when you turn 30, that's not going to happen. And, you know, you've raised some points about the job market to where that may add to their vulnerability, and they may want, in fact, just be able to pack up and go.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. But on the other hand, I've actually seen, and we've got a lot of folks in our residential areas, and I hear all kinds of conversations, but, you know, we felt that what has occurred residentially is there were people that were reluctant to get into the housing market, but we find that it surprises a bit. They are coming in, and it's not as bad as that. Might be that it was delayed a little bit, but there are a lot of people that still remember their parents, grandparents, and a home that they grew up in, and just moving around is okay. But here's the other side of that. If you don't own a home and you pay rent, yes, you might pay a little bit less, but that rent's going to go up, and then it's going to go up, and it's going to go up. You move around or you stay somewhere for a long time, it's going to go up. You're going to help somebody else own real property. You're going to look at them and envy them because they're the ones, there's the rich person that owns this building. And if you do own a piece of real estate, and if we do maintain some advantage, some incentive to become a property owner by way of some interest deductions, if you maintain those things, it's a great way, it really is, in the long term, for people to create some wealth, some retirement that they can then lean on later, because we're not a saving society anymore. So as long as that's happening, I think that we will see people still buying. It was the fish in a pond, fish in a barrel thing that was going on with housing a few years ago. Underwriting standards went by the wayside. That was a big, big problem. So I hopefully this will correct, because I see so much value in owning my own home and I own a lot of properties.
I do as well. I can't imagine. Well, we looked into the future in about 2006, wrote a report for California saying prices could go down by half, and yet I didn't sell my residence. And the reason I didn't sell my residence is I realized why I owned my own house, is I didn't want to ask anybody if I could do anything.
Yeah.
If I could paint it or if I could do whatever. That's how important homeownership is to me. And
that's a great point, because when you do own a property versus renting, you know, you're not going to finish the basement. You're not going to build a deck. You're not going to do much of anything with it. The yards aren't as good. I mean, the whole community is better. People are more involved in their community because they care a little more. If it's not yours, you care a little less. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah,
that's the case.
But it's for the person that's there. That's the reason why I think more people own, is because they do want those choices. You know, I wouldn't want to be without it. I just wouldn't. We only have a minute left. I'll tell you just a quick story. I remember I got married at 17, and when I was 20, I finally got to own my first house. And I literally remember mowing my grass for the first time on that Saturday. And honestly, for the first time, I felt like a man, because I had a grant deed to a property with no equity, but it still was mine.
Wow.
And it just had an impact on me. And so, you know, we bought more and more. Our whole clientele, by the way, Bill, buys houses. Some of these guys own 50 free and clear houses in California, and it has been the path to wealth. And it's been a very gradual process. It's not like a stock market booms. It just people buy and they hold it and they pay it off. And that's I still very much like real estate as a ticket to wealth. We didn't get to a lot of commercial real estate, but I think we had a great conversation. Bill, thank you so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Bill Armstrong, the 2013 treasurer of the National Association of Realtors. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.